I'm driving home after work this last week. I came upon a car at a stoplight, and the back was just full of stickers, and it wasn't an Outback. That's very typical of those, but, you know, it's my opinion that people who espouse their beliefs with bumper stickers on their cars have very shallow arguments for those said beliefs. You know, maybe you don't like Fords, possibly Chevys are the worst things on the road, but why bring poor Calvin and Hobbes into the argument when they don't deserve it? Are you a Christian? Maybe throw up a fish symbol on your car. How about an atheist? Well, throw up a Darwin fish symbol on your car. Maybe you're an outspoken wristband-wearing Christian. Then stick a truth fish eating the Darwin fish on your car. That will really prove your point well. You know, bumper stickers are just symbols that serve to instigate a polar response, either in support or opposition of some particular idea. But not all bumper stickers are made for those whose wit is on the dimmer side. In years past, the church used to give out big bumper stickers with our feast materials. And I was always excited to put them on. It was next to impossible to get them off. It would ruin any plastic bumper that you stuck them to. They would not come off, though, at least during the feast. You know, I remember a few occasions driving to the feast, and this was out in the middle of, you know, some state somewhere, running into somebody with a sticker on their car. I think at one time we were at a rest stop. They were going to a different feast site, but we were able to stop, and we knew we were both part of the same group, but happened to be going in different, going to different sites, and it was kind of exciting. And to me, that's been the only purpose I've ever seen or found, in my opinion, for a good bumper sticker. So, you know, I'm sitting behind this car at the stoplight, waiting for the light to turn. And I know right off the bat that they didn't vote for Republicans. They think all religions should coexist. And oddly, you know, enough, based upon their other stickers, they acknowledge the covenant God made with mankind by prominently displaying a rainbow sticker. And I thought it was odd to see those diametrically opposite views on the same car. Like, wow, that's weird. Like, they understand that covenant. But they didn't vote for Kerry or whoever. So when did the rainbow become a symbol of someone's support of peace, of love, of freedom, of homosexuality? You know, you might argue to the contrary that, well, that has a different meaning for me. And if you were 30 years, maybe 40 years ago, maybe it did. But go ahead and fill your car with bumper stickers on the back. But I don't think others will think you don't think that's what it means. Most people know when you see that a lot more is underlying, a lot more meaning for that simple little sticker. So did the meaning then that God gave to rainbows pass away? Does it not mean the same thing anymore? Well, of course not. You know, like so many other symbols and meanings that God has given to this world, they have been corrupted by a world that looks to Satan for its answers, that looks to Satan for its relief and for its freedom. Genesis 9 and verse 8, you see, when this covenant was instituted, Genesis 9 and starting in verse 8. Then God spoke to Noah and said to his sons with him, saying, "And as for me, behold, I establish my covenant with you and with your descendants after you, and every living creature that is with you, the birds, the cattle, and every beast of the earth with you, all that go out of the ark, every beast of the earth," so that sets up that it includes everything, "thus I establish my covenant with you. Never again shall all flesh be cut off by the waters of the flood. Never again shall there be a flood to destroy the earth." And God said, "This is the sign of the covenant which I make between me and you and every living creature that is with you for perpetual generations." That hasn't stopped. It still is going on. "I set my rainbow in the cloud, and it shall be for the sign of the covenant between me and the earth. It shall be when I bring a cloud over the earth, that the rainbow shall be seen in the cloud, and I will remember my covenant, which is between me and you and every living creature of all flesh. The water shall never again become a flood to destroy all flesh. The rainbow shall be in the cloud, and I will look on it and remember the everlasting covenant between God and every living creature of all flesh that is on the earth. And God said to Noah, this is the sign of the covenant which I have established between me and all flesh that is on earth. Well, according to God's very word, the rainbow is still a sign between him and you, between him and me. You know, we also know through prophecy of God's word that his word will not be broken. He will not destroy the earth with water. 2 Peter 3. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens will pass away with a great noise, and the elements will melt with fervent heat. Both the earth and the works that are in it will be burned up. So he's not going to drown us. He's going to burn us up for what we have. In essence, the same disobedience that mankind showed to God before that caused him to destroy mankind with water will happen again, but with fire. I want to do a short word image association test with you. So what's the first image that comes to mind? Jesus Christ. Now, did the image that the world uses of a mind of a come to mind of a dying, pathetic, you know, emaciated, weak man? You know, it's hard not to conjure up those visions based upon how the world sees Christ. You know, with the prevalence of imagery and of idols that we're clearly told not to use, that this world, it's hard to get away from seeing Christ in that manner. And that's exactly how Satan wants it. You know, Satan doesn't stop us from worshiping God. He doesn't remove the knowledge of Christ to us. He just misdirects us to worship a different God. To see a different Christ than the real one that lives and that intercedes for us daily. You know, this week we had as we'll hear more and more about, a new pope elected. And I watched the first speech of this new pope this week as he addressed this huge, hysterical crowd. And one of the commentators, and this was a Catholic news channel, commented on the pope's wooden cross. And it was said that he was such a humble man for choosing to wear his wooden cross, not one of the gold and jewel-encrusted crosses that are available to the pope, but he instead, because of his great humility, chose a wooden cross to use. You know, even in the early first and second centuries, when this church, after Christ's death, began, when it had been corrupted, the church leaders were still removing icons, still removing imagery from the churches. But those images, obviously, have not stayed out of church. They have become a major part in mankind's religion and how they have decided God needs to be observed. You know, one local headline in Rome stated, Pope Francis trinkets sell briskly near the Vatican. And by trinkets, they mean images of the Pope with rosary beads on those, or with rosary beads with his image on them, all items venerated as having a sacred part in the worship to God. Exodus 20. Exodus 20, and starting in verse 1, set of scriptures we are possibly familiar with. Exodus 20, and verse 1, and God spoke all these words, saying, I am the Lord your God, who brought you out of the land of Egypt, out of the house of bondage. You shall have no other gods before me. You shall not make for yourself a carved image, any likeness of anything that is in heaven above, or that is in the earth beneath, or that is in the water under the earth. You shall not bow down to them nor serve them, for I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, visiting the iniquity of the fathers upon the children to the third and fourth generations of those who hate me." You know, in that speech, the Pope said he was going to spend that next day praying to the Virgin Mary before her altar. Luckily, they don't have children either, because those curses would be passed on generation after generation, at least children that they talk about. Well, to me, those commands are quite clear. The world, or to the world, obviously not. You know, the Eastern Orthodox Church is known for its heavy use of idolatry. I'm sorry, they don't call it idolatry, they call it worship. There, if you've seen their churches, they're just filled with relics, with icons, with different methods to worship God. And to them, an icon or idol is a representation of some sacred personage, as Christ or a saint or an angel, painted usually on a wood surface and venerated as itself as sacred. You know, to get around one of these commandments in Exodus, they say, "To this day, in obedience to the commandment to not make graven images," so they acknowledge that there is a commandment to not make graven images, "Orthodox icons may never be more than 3/4 base relief." And that means, basically, as long as your image isn't completely lifelike, and it's not a true 3D statue, it's not an image. It's not a graven image. It's okay. You know, we know what Satan has done to corrupt and to debase God's plan. But, you know, with all of his effort, with his continued resurgence of even idolatry into what should be real worship of God, with all of his influence in this world, he has not been able to extinguish the plan of God. As much as he has deceived this world, God's plan still goes forward. God's plan cannot be overwhelmed. It cannot be broken. It will never lose its direction, and it is guaranteed to succeed because God said it. But that guarantee is not necessarily applicable to us. The confusion that Satan spreads can overwhelm us. It can break our ties with the true God by replacing it with false symbols. You know, the desires of our flesh can lead us to failure. It's not guaranteed because we call upon or look upon a statue that we will and that we are saved. You know, it's that idea of us losing the crown that we're all searching for, that's the desire of Satan. That's what he wants to get out of his time left in this existence. The desire of God, though, is different. 1 Timothy 2 and verse 3. "For this is good and acceptable in the sight of God our Savior, who desires all men to be saved and to come to the knowledge of the truth." That is the desire of God. That is what he wants out of our existence here. You know, if we truly want God's desire to be realized, if we want his rewards to be evident in our lives, then we cannot become bumper sticker Christians. You know, Satan's arguments fall apart when you look at the world through God's eyes and by having his spirit dwelling within us. It might make sense to people that do not have God's spirit, but to us, it's easy to see their fallacies. And Satan, don't get him wrong, or don't underestimate him, he is brilliant. He was created perfect, but his wit, like those he deceives, is very dimly lit. Foremost, because he thought that he could place himself on the throne of God, that he somehow was more powerful than God. He forgot, he ignored, and he rebelled against God's will. So let's be steadfast, brethren, in not tailgating Satan, not getting too close in order to figure out what he has stuck to the back of his Prius, because he is heading off a cliff and will say anything for us to follow him with him.